Whether you like it or not, the internet is making NPCs. Everywhere you go, everybody has the same opinion, the same thoughts. No one is their individual selves. Even for yourself. You might have noticed that you might find it harder and harder to concentrate. Movies or books that could have kept you entertained for hours can barely hold your attention anymore. You might find you're more easily distracted, jumping from one bit of content to the next in seconds. And it's not just you. The internet is transforming people's brains and making them worse at critical reasoning, worse at focusing, and simply stupider. It seems counterintuitive to say the least. Everyone's walking around with 100 libraries worth of books in their pocket. Surely people having a world of information at their fingertips could only make them smarter. It's like imagining a world where everyone has plenty of food, but people are getting hungrier. It just doesn't really make sense. That is until you think about how that information is being delivered. It might be true that billions of people around the world have all of this knowledge. It's all just sitting there a couple clicks away. However, the problem is that most people aren't reading it. Imagine you gave every kid in the world a magic button. When they press it, they can pick out whatever food they want from a massive menu, and it will instantly appear in front of them. All of them would choose their favorite food, something they knew they loved and that they were familiar with. If they could keep the button, they'd end up eating their favorites for every meal. We'd end up with a lot of chocolate wrappers and empty soda cans lying all over, as well as a lot of fat kids. And this is the problem we face today. We can choose from Google's almost infinite menu for whatever content we'd like, but most people end up choosing the intellectual equivalent of candy time and time again. Things that they know they'll enjoy, and that don't challenge them at all. A never-ending supply of content they know they'll love, delivered straight to their brains on a never-ending conveyor belt. Ever since they began measuring it in the early 1900s, IQ scores have increased by around 3 points every decade. And while IQ might not be equivalent to intelligence, it's at least strongly correlated. Whether you think it's because of better education, better diet, or a mixture of factors, we have been getting smarter. That was until a few years ago, as new studies on kids born and brought up during the pandemic have shown that their IQ has dropped an awfully large amount. One study by Brown University that is still undergoing peer approval showed that, quote, children born during the pandemic have significantly reduced verbal, motor, and overall cognitive performance compared to children born pre-pandemic. Another similar study by Columbia University showed that in fine motor skills, general motor skills, and personal social skills, babies born in the pandemic were significantly worse off. It all amounts to decades of cognitive development getting wiped out in just a few short years. Now, the reason why is hard to say right now. It isn't because of COVID-19 itself. The study included mothers who had been infected whilst pregnant, and it didn't have much of an impact at all compared to healthy mothers. Instead, the study suggests it's due to stress. With the pressures of possibly losing their jobs, limited social contact, and moving fully online, tons of people were suffering. And parental stress is known to negatively impact the cognitive health and development of children, so it does kind of make sense. And it is pretty much a certainty, however, that the internet isn't directly to blame yet. While it might have stressed out the parents and had a knock-on effect, no one-year-olds are posting on TikTok or Twitter, even though it might seem like it sometimes with the rise of iPad kids. The important point, though, is that straight out of the gate, kids are being made dumber by how messed up the world's become. Once these kids go online, though, it's a different story. That's when they get thrown headfirst into the maelstrom of information and get influenced by the algorithms. We live in an increasingly online world. The first thing that lots of people do after waking up is opening their phone. It's replaced or is replacing pretty much every other medium of information. In short, it's the new portal into the modern world. The problem is, though, that the internet's a much more passive yet addicting way of consuming information. Every new headline or post you read is like a mystery box for your brain. It doesn't know what it's going to find, and most of the time it's boring. You can skim tens of hundreds of posts before you find one that actually interests you. You can idly click through the same amount of YouTube videos before finding one you actually want to watch. It's the process that matters in the end, the uncertainty of when you'll get the next hit. It's this process that drives people towards behavior far more efficiently than regular expected rewards. In studies, rats who sometimes get a reward from pushing a button are far more motivated and push the button far more often than rats that always get that reward. It's the same logic behind games, selling people loot boxes instead of just actually selling the loot itself. But what does this mean for kids brought up on these systems? When their window into the world is itself a version of the system of gambling for uncertain rewards, what are the effects? If you've seen a kid who's completely enthralled with their mum's iPad and throws a tantrum if it's taken away, then you've already seen it. This is something society has realized, although it might not have really accepted it yet. You see, the World Health Organization recommends that schools have strict rules about smartphones and that parents and teachers should drastically limit screen time. The 2019 announcement came after studies showed that intensive use was implicated in poor memory, psychological problems, and mental health issues, as well as text comprehension problems. In other words, smartphones make kids forget things easier, makes them depressed, and makes them worse at reading. Their mistake, though, was in not expanding the advice to people above the age of 18. So, what's it doing to adults? If kids were the only ones whose brains were changing and transforming under these pressures, then they'd be the only ones really affected. But everyone from the cradle to the grave has a degree of neuroplasticity. It seems obvious when you think about it. You're always creating new memories whenever you're conscious. These are the brain forming new connections or reliving old ones that it recognizes. So whatever age you are, your brain is constantly changing and adapting itself to its environment. The problem is with the modern environment we find ourselves in. In the West, at least, pretty much everyone owns a smartphone and interacts with the internet in some way. Some older people might have chosen not to partake, but among 16 to 24 year olds in the UK, over 95% own smartphones, and on average, they check them every 12 minutes. The way that so much of our lives are lived through the internet and through screens makes it far less noticeable than other addictions. If you order your groceries, read your news, and get your entertainment from one device, then it'll become second nature. It makes the cycle of addiction for smartphones and internet use far easier to fall into. The internet has made it much easier to learn everything about anything, but at the same time, it can be really hard to figure out what information is accurate. Most of the time, we assume the first headline or Google result we read is the truth, but that doesn't give us the full picture. And there's a way to actually break free from the internet's algorithms and echo chambers using a website and app called Ground News. They gather related articles from around the world and across the political spectrum in one place so that you can compare coverage on any given story and easily see a source's political bias, reliability rating, and ownership. And having all these different perspectives in one place actually forces you to think critically about what you're reading, and is essential when it comes to the issues like the Israel-Hamas war, where there really are no easy answers. For example, this story about South Africa taking Israel to international court, accusing them of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza, has been dominating the news cycle. Up top, there's a quick summary of this court case from the left, center, and right-leaning perspective, and here you can see more than 500 sources have been reporting on it worldwide. With all of this chatter, it's so important to separate facts from opinions, which is why I like comparing headlines to see how the case is being framed across the political spectrum. Left-leaning sources described Israel's actions in Gaza as devastating, and their response to the lawsuits as propaganda, whereas right-leaning sources called South Africa's case hypocritical and even anti-Semitic. Only getting your news from one source can skew how you view the world, leaving you with blind spots and biases. But Ground News has a blind spot feed for that exact reason. It highlights stories disproportionately covered by one side of the political spectrum. Anyone can form an opinion, but forming an opinion based on a balanced perspective is what makes you a critical thinker. And with that, you have the power to combat misinformation and not be an NPC. The internet can actually be a trustworthy space again with platforms like Ground News. They aren't funded by media companies or big tech. Their only agenda is to make the news transparent, and plans go for as little as $1 a month to make it widely accessible. So take back control of how you consume news and go to ground.news/moon, or click my link in the description to subscribe for less than $1 a month, or get 40% off the Unlimited Access Vantage plan, the same one I use to provide you societal commentary grounded in facts. I really believe this is the future of news. How does using your smartphone actually change your brain? Anecdotally, it's far more obvious in kids whose brains are far more malleable. This video of a kid swiping on an imaginary iPad in his sleep tells you all you need to know. But scarily, what might seem like a slightly unbelievable video turns out to have a scientific basis. One study examined how the brains of people who regularly use touchscreens change over time. Those who use them a lot, like smartphone addicts, show an increase in cortical potential for their thumbs and index fingers. It means that people's brains got so used to overusing their thumbs and certain fingers, giving the parts of the brain that direct them much more attention than normal. And this is what forms the foundation of the addictive cycle. The brain's unconscious processes see it simply as a reward mechanism. The use of the thumb and the finger swiping on the screen leads to a dopamine release, so the brain adapts to make itself more efficient at it, and possibly loses other skills over time as a result. This is the source of that mindless scrolling we find ourselves immersed in. And so that's just one way that mobile phone use and the internet changes people's brains. But how does it change people's minds? Well, as we go into another election year, in both the UK and the US, as well as a bunch of other countries, people are definitely more divided than ever. In the US, the same mouldy candidates and the same black and white issues are dominating the election once again. For some, politics has crystallized into an us v them scenario, where the opposition are completely wrong about everything. For others, the culture war has led to an increasing apathy and detachment from the whole system. It's like millions of people stopped appreciating the nuance and doubled down on whatever belief system they were predisposed to be attracted towards. And people often blame social media for this, based on how it pushes people towards echo chambers. It's something we'll explore further later on, but it might not be one of the only reasons. Reading comprehension is another thing that social media affects. We don't read Twitter or Facebook or really anything else on the screen like we'd read a book. Instead, we skim read, our eyes darting around to find the relevant information. It's completely different to reading line after line in order, more like hunting than just going through it. It's a process that comes from the mechanical dopamine loop we talked about earlier. Our brains try to get more efficient to maximize the pleasure they get. It means they begin cutting out the boring bits and getting straight to the good stuff always, and if they don't find what they're looking for, they get bored and move on. There's always another thing to read or consume, so wasting more than a few seconds of reading something just isn't worth it anymore. And the result of all of this is that people stop reading things that they don't want to listen to. If something doesn't match up with their preconceptions and their expectations, it doesn't give them that dopamine hit and they go elsewhere. People will see and engage with things that make their beliefs seem right, or things that make the opposition seem stupid and wrong. It doesn't help that the tech companies know all of this as well. They specifically feed people rage bait and comfort agreement on a daily basis to keep them hooked on the dopamine cycle. It ends up creating millions of people who are completely submerged in dogmatic thinking and a strict ideology. It all makes mob mentality that much more likely, to the point that it becomes the norm. It's already been established in discourse that herd thinking is everywhere on the modern internet. Just one piece of information, regardless of whether it's true or false, can set thousands of people down the warpath. And a lot of it is to do with the lack of consequences. Anonymity is powerful, and it means that people say whatever they want based on an immediate emotional reaction. But a larger part is due to the experience of being caught up in one of these online waves. If you've ever been packed into a large crowd, then you'll know it's a unique experience. You can find yourself getting sucked in by an undercurrent of shared emotions. Each individual moment is chaotic and confusing. Rumors spread like wildfire. Someone might think they overheard something and spread it around, and once it catches on, it can change the crowd's mood almost instantly. What's key, though, is how the crowd becomes a single entity, which overshadows the individual people that are a part of it. People become united by those underlying emotions, whether they're happiness and joy or fear and anger. It's a powerful, motivating, and almost tribal experience, which we're doubtlessly predisposed to get caught up in by our social biology. It would be useful for a tribe to all feel the same things and amplify their feelings together when they get threatened. It makes them unified and ready for action. What's important about crowds and mobs, though, is that they're stupid. One rumor or a spark can set them off and make people do things they would never do alone. Normal people turn into temporary monsters, so caught up in the waves of emotions that they do unthinkable things. Social media takes these powerful evolutionary mechanisms and warps them for its own gain. In fact, on social media, the individual gets eliminated pretty much entirely, and everyone becomes part of the crowd, adding to its numbers and consequently adding fuel to whatever fire is burning at that time. That skim reading and hunting for information process we talked about goes haywire. Once whatever cause or inciting incident is vaguely understood, not much else matters. People pick up on the emotional undertones of the situation far more quickly than the specific facts. It means they don't have time to be rational and think things through before they get caught up in the wave. To do that would mean denying that addictive process and undoing years of daily conditioning. Another thing that adds to the process is where the information and discussion on a topic actually comes from. A staggering 90% of the internet is made up of what people call lurkers. People who don't interact at all. They don't post comments or even like or upvote things very often. They just read and absorb. What they're absorbing is left up to the other 10% who went out of their way to comment and add to the discussion. Often they'll naturally be more enthusiastic, more interested, or some of the most enraged people out there. They're definitely the ones who care the most about the topic, otherwise they wouldn't be engaging with it. This vocal minority then dictates what everyone else reads and decides the emotional undertones of the online mob. Of course, they're always generally representative of what people are actually feeling. It's just an amplified version. A good comparison would be a crowd where everyone is getting pulled along by what the most passionate 10% of people in that crowd feel. Everything about the mob mentality is amplified on social media because of this, and it's only going to get more real with the rise of augmented reality and virtual reality. And you can probably see this today with your own social media habits. This might not be the case for everyone, but tons of people immediately scroll down to the comments to see how people feel. It's useful because it tells the hunting part of your brain whether it's worth being interested in. If you see people saying things you agree with and that interest you, then the content itself is probably worthwhile as well. But something that people might not notice is that it takes away the work of deciding how you personally feel and think about something. The legwork has already been done, and you get to tap into that emotional undercurrent of the online crowd almost instantly. The comments act as a replacement for the way you instinctively take in the atmosphere whenever you walk into a room with other people. This is all relatively natural for things that aren't complex issues with no right answer. If someone famous and well-loved dies, then you can instantly understand the emotions that go along with that. It's heartwarming and comforting to know that so many people are feeling the same things that you feel. It adds a sort of comfort that can temporarily placate how lonely social media and modern life can feel. But the problems arise when it's not a simple situation, and instead it's a complicated issue with no real right answers. The kinds of issues you might find in politics, for example. Instead of making their own judgments based on their own personal experiences of the world, people fall into the mob's verdicts on the issue. Now imagine this process repeating every day for years on end, and it all becomes clear why people are so divided today. It's getting to a point where society is slowly getting torn apart at the seams as everyone turns on each other. All of these processes don't operate on everyone in the same way though. People get suckered into echo chambers based on what the algorithm sees they like, and they rarely leave them. It gives them the comfort that only ideology can grant, the belief that everything in the world is accounted for, and that there's an answer for everything. But as this happens, their worldview gets closed off and they become unable to deal with things outside of their narrow perspective. It complements the fact that people's attention spans and their ability to think deeply have been decimated by years of social media scrolling. It's much easier for these people to bury their heads in the sand than actually confront something that their ideology and their echo chamber can't deal with. On social media, that rarely happens, of course. People stay within their echo chambers, and they only see their own group's perspective. If they come into contact with the other side, it's only through a strawman argument and criticism. It all goes wrong when they go back into the real world, and the things they experience aren't being filtered through an ideological mesh. People like this end up either shutting down, or they just see other people as caricatures they know from social media. They spout the lines they've seen over and over again, failing to actually engage with the person across from them. It's this late stage symptom of society's illness that gives rise to the NBC meme. It's only when people are completely submerged in ideology that they reach this point, though that doesn't take long sometimes. It's always seriously damaging society, possibly fatally in the long run, but the people who have orchestrated these changes and built these machines don't really care, for they actively encourage it. The same echo chambers that formed on social media are just a more effective and wide-reaching version of the model that mainstream news has been running for decades. They weren't even built for this purpose. The online echo chambers and algorithms don't exist solely to turn people into NPCs. It's just a happy byproduct for the people running them. Their main goal is just to extract advertising money by keeping people engaged. The rest is just secondary. It's the same principle that the mainstream media has been exploiting for decades now, only far less efficiently. Unlike Twitter or Facebook, they can't personalize the content they show people to maximize engagement, so they go for a catch-all method instead. A few choices of channels only really push two versions of the narrative. They give people an enemy to hate, whilst reporting everything else within their ideological lens. Real issues rarely get solved, because they're not the ones being publicized every day and focused on. They rarely talk to people without a teleprompter, or delve into actual issues at all. People can't talk for more than 30 seconds before they're replaced by the next ideological spokesperson. It was already a growing problem before, but social media's war on attention spans has made them double down, to keep people from just looking at their phones instead. It's hard to notice for most people. Either it's all they've ever known, or they're just too indoctrinated to tell. But watching newer online journalists, without any of this baggage, really does show the modern news cycle for what it is. It's simple, really. When you look at anyone online, any of these travel people, you actually learn so much more about the world and have a much deeper understanding of complicated issues than just watching these little highly edited snippets. Nowadays, while social media might slowly be eating the mainstream news networks, they're working hand in hand on keeping the culture war going. If people are divided and constantly paranoid of the other side, then it leaves the people with real power free to do what they want. The fewer free thinkers there are, the easier it is for politicians and billionaires to keep the status quo. They can keep drawing people into never-ending ideological arguments, and they can keep people drunk on endless entertainment. It means people are too distracted to see the real issues. We keep getting new information on how far the offshore tax havens really go, and just how much of our wealth is being hoarded and wasted in vaults. But even when it's right there, nobody pays attention. It's not an ideological issue, and it would actively hurt the people in power if it was talked about more. So the algorithms don't promote it, and the news does the bare minimum in covering it. And there's so many other issues, like the certain client list, that can never be spoken about by anyone, because it's all about money and nothing else. It's why the establishment has been desperately trying to cancel Joe Rogan for years, despite the fact that he's pretty much a normal dude when it comes to his views. He actually talks to people and lets them add nuance and understanding to the world, something which goes against everything they're trying to uphold. His popularity and the popularity of other people like him is the light at the end of the tunnel. There's still millions of people that are desperate for long, in-depth discussion on the issues that actually affect them. The appetite for that never went away. What's key is that people try as hard as they can to keep their critical faculties alive, despite the constant onslaught. But as long as there are still people trying to do that, the world hopefully won't just be completely populated by NPCs.